This meeting is now being recorded.
Thank you, everyone, for joining. You heard that this meeting is being recorded, and we'll post the meeting after the meeting for the others who were not able to join us today. But I think we will still have a fruitful meeting.
Hello?
Hi, Mary. Can you hear me? This is Steve. I just want to see if it works for the rest of us.
Hey, Steve. It's Mary. I can hear you.
All right. I'll try to get a hold of Dennis to see or to inform him that we can't hear him because I saw the slides move, so I feel like he's still speaking right now.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, too, and I was hoping it wasn't just me, but it sounds like it might be on his line.
Hello, sorry, I don't know what happened there, but I guess this happens. I've heard it happened with Fabian's the other call, too.
Yeah, I'm back.
So, let's see. Okay, everybody's back. So let's resume our meeting. So I was going through the agenda. You can see it on the Elevate Connect room. Basically, we're going to do status, key milestones, and we'll spend a lot of time talking about the INGO identifier and contact data that Steve was able to actually get. And I'll talk a little bit about the maintenance of the list, and we'll talk about our future meeting schedule, including the Helsinki plan. So, next. This timeline has not changed, so we're still sticking to our original timeline. The only thing that I did was highlight the ICANN 56 in June. That's happening today. But you will see the next diamonds in the flow is called release of draft implementation for public comment. That is happening in August. And we're going to announce the policy effective date in January of next year, or January or February, I think it's going to be. And then we're looking for the policy effective date in August of next year, sometime middle of next year. So those three milestones are what I call the key milestones. And the reason that I separate them is I think it's critical that we understand as a team what must be delivered before those milestones can be achieved and what are the items that we can wait for the next milestone. So let me go through them. Our first milestone was the public comment for the implementation release. And we're looking to make that happen in August 2016. So that means we obviously have to have the consensus policy language, the document itself, that we'll be posting for the comment. But most importantly, the other things that we must have for us to write that into the policy document, we need to have some agreement with people like UNDESA. And Steve will tell you more about what that means later. And also, we have to have some systems defined, well-defined, and have some agreement that we can actually deliver this type of claim system in the period of time we're projecting. And, of course, the other thing is that within the policy language, we have to identify or define how these lists will be updated. And we'll talk more about that, too. So IPT, our implementation team, has gathered and identified those four items as a critical prerequisite for our first milestone. In other words, we cannot go beyond if we don't have all four of them, is what we agreed to. And we wanted to make sure that the IRT are on the same page, and we all agree with that. Hey, so next milestone, so let me tell you what we can wait for, even though we don't have it right now, is on the next list. It's announced policy effective date, and then I have it here as February 2017, so next year. So the things that we can wait for are things like IGO list. As you know, we have the list from GATT that contains English only. However, the policy recommendation asks for up to two languages. So we have to seek the second language, which is optional, from the GATT, and we are pursuing that now. But even if we don't get that by August, which we probably won't, we can go ahead and publish the implementation plan for public comment. So that's the implementation plan, implementation team's plan right now. And along with the other list, we have IOC, Red Cross, all those lists already, and we now just got the ECOSOC list. Point here is there are things that we can do after August time period. The final milestone is the policy effective date. Of course, this is supposed to happen 6 months from the announcement. And before the effective date, obviously, everybody has to be ready to have this policy adhered to, which means for internally ICANN, we have to develop and make the claim system operational on the date that it becomes effective. So the future milestone, we may have some more details now, but today I wanted to focus on the first milestone and those four items and bring that to your attention. Do you have any comments about this, Peter?
Just a question, and excuse me if you have informed of that before, but when it comes to the IGO list and the two languages from GAC, as you said, one language will be English, as I said, and the other one is up to the each IGO. Will it be the official language where the IGO, each IGO has their official office, or what will be the second language, you think?
So I think maybe Mary's on the phone, or Steve, do you want to speak to that? The policy itself, let me wait to see if they want to speak to that first. Mary or Steve? I think Mary's coming online.
Yeah, this is Mary. Sorry, what was the question, Peter?
The first question was that, if I understand you correctly, one of the two languages from the IGO list is English, and the other, as it is up to two languages from GAC, the second language, will it be where each IGO are officially registered, or what language will it be from which country, so to speak? Are there any specific policy about that, or is it free to choose?
So this is Mary, and Steve or Dennis or anyone else, feel free to jump in. I think we did have a discussion about this at some point, and the assumption is that for many of the IGOs, one of the languages will be English, but this is not necessarily going to be the case for all. So the request that we have out to the GAC basically says up to two languages to be specified by the IGOs through the GAC. And as I mentioned, we expect that many of them will indicate English as either the only language or English as one of the two. But my recollection is that that is where things are, if that helps.
Okay. So we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, we had several discussions on this, and what Mary stated is where we came to.
Thanks.
Okay, we'll continue then. Any more questions? Hi, Lori, welcome. So I was just going over our key milestones. The first milestone being the public comment release in August. That's the target we're all trying to work to. And those four items are what we believe is required to achieve that milestone. So, quick status about the policy, the plan. We have the draft policy language. The version 4 is in development, and there hasn't been much update, so I have not reissued it yet. But what we're looking to is add those items that are right now missing, the list update process, and the 90-day claims process, things like that. So in regards to the 90-day claims implementation, we are in design phase, and we have reached out to our current TMCH service providers, and we're talking to them about adding this as a feature to the existing system. So they, we will probably hear back from them in a week or two, but this is something more I can tell you about at the next meeting. Regarding the list itself, we just spoke about IGO seeking up to two languages. That is a letter that we drafted and is in review at the ICANN executive, and after we get their approval, or it'll be signed probably by ACRM, and it'll go to the GAC chair requesting that up to two languages, and then after that we'll follow up with a GAC liaison. On the INGO, the good news, of course, is that we received the ECOFLOW list, and that's coming up next on the next slide, and Steve will tell you a lot of details about that. Any questions on the project status? Then we'll move on. Steve, you want to take it from here?
Sure. Thanks, Dennis. This is Steve Chan from the policy support staff, and I just want to take you through the update of where we are in regards to INGOs. And so first we'll just start with a reminder of the policy recommendation scope. Scope 1 is the general consultative list, of which there are 144 organizations. Scope 2 is the special consultative list, of which there are approximately 3,500 organizations. And so at the top level, Scope 1 full name in English only receives protection, and they're ineligible for delegation. And at the second level, Scope 1 and Scope 2, the full names in English only receive 90-day claims, essentially the scope of the policy recommendations. As a status reminder of where we are in terms of procuring those lists, we've actually established contacts with UNDESA, or the Department of Economic and Social Affairs. They've provided us with a list of the organizations for both the general consultative list and the special consultative list. And they've also provided the pertinent contact data that would be needed for a claim service. However, in providing us with this data, the way in which they described ICANN's usage was perhaps not as precise as we think is ideal. And so the thought was to prepare a lightweight memorandum of understanding, or MOU, ensure that both ICANN and UNDESA are absolutely clear how the data will be used by ICANN. And so where we are now is that ICANN is currently preparing a draft MOU, which will then need to be discussed with UNDESA to hopefully come to agreement. And so the intention is that the MOU would limit ICANN's usage of the data to what is spelled out in the policy. Or in other words, the top-level protections and second-level claims notifications I just mentioned previously. And the MOU would be simply a mechanism to ensure that there is mutual understanding of how ICANN will use the data and that the data would not be used for any other purpose. Any questions on this page and where we are in regards to that? Petter, please go ahead.
Just a thought. Is there a possibility for, if there will be someone that claims to be an INGO that are not listed, is there a specific deadline for that kind of company to come up with their identification status and so, or is this the final list, so to speak?
Thanks, Peter. This is Steve again. And I can't claim to be a complete expert on how the ECOSOC list is maintained, but from what we've been able to determine from discussing with our contacts at UNDESA is that there is an official approval mechanism to be included on the ECOSOC list, and the council that approves the additions to that list, they actually only meet once a year. So in essence, for ICANN, we'd only be updating that list once a year when we're provided the updated list from UNDESA. And hopefully that answers your question.
Thanks.
Okay, moving on to the next page. Next slide. So this touches on the statistics I mentioned about the number of general and special consultative organizations on the ECOSOC list. Below that, though, is the information that we requested, and as I mentioned, we already received from UNDESA. These are the fields that we thought were necessary for the claim service. So it's the official name, which will eventually be converted into the DNS label, the English name of the organization, if the official name isn't in English, address, phone, email, fax, URL, and then, of course, the consultative status, whether or not it's general or special. No hands raised. Moving on to the next slide. And so finally, we just wanted to share a few examples of some of the names that are on the list and just to explain how these names would be converted into DNS labels. And so as a reminder, the policy says it's the full name of the organizations in English. And so these are examples of names from that official names, quote-unquote official names, column on the data export that UNDESA provided to us. And so the implementation or the conversion of these strings into DNS labels, we would utilize an algorithm that's already actually been used in support of the development of the Spec 5 reserve names list. And what that essentially does is it removes or replaces characters that are not valid in the DNS. So, in essence, there's no evaluation or adjustment on ICANN's part. It's treating the list that's provided by ECOSOC as the authoritative list and then simply making them usable in the DNS. I think that's actually all I had. So if there's any questions, please go ahead and raise your hand or speak up on audio.
Hey, Steve. Lori.
Hi, Lori.
Hi. So my question is, I'm looking at these names, so that would mean that the parens disappear, and are the spaces condensed? I mean, because then it really bastardizes the name almost. I don't know how that's helpful.
Thanks.
I mean, I understand why. Yeah, I understand why you wouldn't want to make editorial changes, but I almost feel like by not making some sort of editorial adjustment that it might actually undermine the purpose.
So that's a fair point, and I, all right, this is Steve again for the transcript. And I might look to Francisco for a little understanding on exactly how that algorithm works. But acknowledging the point you made, but I would just try to talk about mechanically how it works.
Mm-hmm.
From what I understand, there's actually two versions generated, one in which it would take out things like the brackets, and either one version would have a space, and then one version would have an underscore, I believe. And that doesn't respond to your functionality or your whether or not it meets the, I guess, the needs of the organizations. But I guess I just want to at least answer mechanically. I see Francisco has raised his hand. Hopefully save me here. Thanks.
Hi, this is Francisco. So just to clarify, the at a general level, the algorithm that has been proposed, as Steve said, will generate two versions of the names for a name that has at least one character that is not allowed in DNS names. One version will be by removing all the not allowed characters, and the other version will be by substituting the not allowed characters with hyphens. And in the case of characters that are not ASCII only, think of a Chinese name or even a Latin name with accents or things like that, that will be converted to IDN, but you will still get two versions of the name. That's the at a high level how the proposed algorithm works. Thank you.
Lori, this is Dennis Chang speaking. The concept here is the implementation of the policy as a rule. The implementation team here discussed whether or not we're going to try and attempt to evaluate what UNDESA provides as the official name, which they have reviewed and accepted as official names. Now, for us to, for anyone else to start changing it, we didn't feel that that was warranted or part of the scope of the implementation plan. I understand when I first saw this, I thought, oh my gosh, we have acronyms that looks like acronyms, and we have quotes, we have parentheses, we have you know, different language, same. It's all mixed. So to go through 3,000 names and trying to make judgment about what the name should be, or trying to ask UNDESA that maybe they have to reach back out and get the correct names or different names. We didn't think that was part of our charter.
Yeah,
so
just
what we wanted to do was to make sure that the IRT, because IRT will have to probably answer these questions when it comes, that you guys are all understanding why we're choosing this path and why we must, and we don't see any option. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes sense administratively, and it's the low bar, I think, and the least controversial. But at the same time, from a practical perspective, I think I mentioned to this group back in Dublin, and I think I did send the list, Mary, that, you know, when we had done a little bit of research on these groups and if they're even using domain names, who have their domain names. And I understand this is not about their domain names as much as it is about their legal name, which can be different, that many of these organizations don't even have websites up or working emails or whatever. I mean, it's a very messy list, and I guess we should acknowledge that. And to the extent that if we choose this path, that we are really being super technical and not necessarily, in my mind, sticking with what I think is more
spirit of what the protections are supposed to be. Yeah, I saw Mary's comment in the chat. I understand. I wouldn't want us opened up to criticism that we're being so technical that we're undermining purpose. That's all.
Yeah, we hear you. I mean, we all feel the same way. But we have to be very careful about not pointing any kind of finger or criticism to UNDESA on how they've chose to accept the names or evaluate them. So, and then, of course, the GNSO, the working group, you know, evaluated this, and they probably thought about this a lot, too.
Yeah.
There are lots of alternatives we thought about. You know, do we go out to NGOs separately and try to contact them? And, you know, should we ask them to come in and register themselves? We thought about a lot of options. But the implementation team had concluded that this is probably the cleanest and the non-controversial way, even though we may see some flaws in the whole.
I have a question then. Would it make, understanding why you chose this path and not necessarily challenging it, because I understand the predicament you're in, would it make sense to have some sort of corroborating policy that would allow anybody on this list to, I don't know if challenge is the right word, but to correct if they're even following? I mean, my guess is the ones who haven't expended the effort to even keep their domain names alive probably aren't even watching, I mean, from a practical perspective. But those who are may want a way to correct. Maybe not call it challenge. Maybe call it correct. Clarify.
Yeah. So this is something maybe we can discuss with UNDESA. I know that they have a process that they go through for accepting and renewing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they update their list annually. So whatever process that they had adapted, we can certainly propose. And one of the things that we talked about was, before we launch anything, we're going to ask UNDESA to send out a notice to all these organizations so they can take appropriate action. But the only way we see if they want to change anything is to go back to the UNDESA and change the ECOSOC list as the authoritative source for us.
I see. My guess is those INGOs that are there who have a real brand protection mechanism in place will be watching anyway. And
yeah.
The others, I don't know. The others, I don't know if it makes any meaningful difference.
Yeah, that's what we're thinking too.
Okay.
Okay, so let's move on. We're probably... Not all the IRT members are here, but this is an important point, and I'm glad that Lori and Peter, you considered it, and you see the reason for this decision, and we'll probably have to make sure that the other IRT members are aware of this approach. Okay, next page, so maintenance. So we talked about the ECOSOC list, and as Steve explained, the UNDESA has a process, annual process of updating their list, and they've agreed to send that to us. And for us, it's simply an updating our list with their list, mirroring all the changes. So that's relatively straightforward, and I think that meets the policy recommendation. On the IGO, as you know, we received the list from the GAC, and we've heard that, and I think it's written into the policy documentation recommendation, that GAC may provide updates list time to time. And our process will be that when at such time we receive a list from the GAC, then we will update our list. That's the process. And in regards to RCRC or IOC, we do not have any policy language, recommendation language about how to update or even if we have to update. But this is where, in spirit of the program, I think that they probably were intending to go ahead and update these lists. I mean, nothing is permanent and forever. So the implementation plan for those two are, we'll just make it the same as IGO. So we're going to rely on the GAC to provide any updates to those lists, and then we'll follow along and implementing it on our side. Does that make sense?
So, Peter here. Then you obviously accept the identification policy that GAC use automatically, or do you have any, do you look at it before, or, because I mean the IGO list from GAC is not the same as the IGO list for protected by the Paris Convention, for example. I presume that their list is a little bit, it's more extensive.
Sorry, IGO list from the GAC is different from some other list, did you say?
Yeah, I mean, well, they have their own list. It's not based on the Paris Convention on the protected IGOs.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's the IGOs list for the RCRC and IOCs, what would that be based on?
So Mary has a hand raised, and I would like Mary to perhaps address this. Go ahead, Mary.
Thanks, Dennis, and thanks, Heather. So indeed, as Dennis noted, the IGO list is the list provided to ICANN by the GAC, and the policy recommendations were limited to that list. The inclusion of IGOs on that list, based on the criteria that was supplied to us by the GAC, would seem to correspond more to eligibility for registration in .int. In other words, in terms of your other comment, this is not based on Article 6ter or anything in the Paris Convention. So if I might then just add another comment that takes it outside the remit and scope of today's discussion, Peter, I would imagine that one of the reasons you're asking is the possible implications for the curative rights work that we are doing. And I think in that context, that's still ongoing, but what we're doing here is simply implementing or attempting to implement the policies that have already been adopted by the GNSO and the board.
Okay, yeah, thanks. I have what to say.
Okay, thank you, Peter. See, so RC and IOC, the implementation considered, since we have no recommendation for update, should we remain silent? And we thought that wasn't a responsible thing to do, so we thought we would at least provide a mechanism and propose it. And, of course, to the IRT first here, but along the way, public comment, and we'll see how the public feels about this methodology. So, yes, we are indeed giving the GAC a lot of authority here to make the changes. Okay, next. So let's talk about the future meetings. So it's our intent that we're going to have three more meetings before the August. The meetings are scheduled to drive to our next milestone of publication for public comment, our document. So that is, let's see, we want that to be in August. That's what we said, right? So we'll have four more meetings till then. So today is the 9th. The next meeting will be in Helsinki. It is on the 28th, and it's an hour, 9:15 to 10:30, so it's a 75-minute meeting. And then after that meeting, we'll have two more meetings. So that's what we have planned. And as we go along, of course, if we are in good shape and we don't need one or two of these meetings, we can always cancel, but we wanted to put them on your calendar so that we can have you to review. The other meetings of interest that ICANN56, I think, I wanted to bring to your attention are two more meetings. One is the curative rights mechanism policy development process that Mary just spoke about. I know, Peter, you're very involved in that, so you'll probably be there. And
yep.
I will be also. And the other is the, and I picked this up from the calendar that was just published on ICANN website. So we'll look through the Helsinki meeting calendar and see if I missed anything. But the other is a sort of a presentation to the GAC on the IGO and INGO, the names and acronym protection. So I suspect this is a follow-up meeting about the acronym. And I think if somebody else knows more about these meetings, feel free to speak up. Go ahead, Mary.
Thanks, Dennis. So just to note that this last session you just mentioned is a GAC session, so there's been no involvement from the GNSO or GNSO staff side or GDD. We don't know what that covers, so Dennis, I think that your guess is probably what it will be. The other
okay.
We'll see. I think many of us will try to be there because my assumption is that this will focus on the unresolved recommendations, which as yet, therefore, is not the subject of our implementation, but it will nevertheless be interesting. The related point I wanted to make, and this may or may not be confirmed, but given that there's been some recent correspondence between the GNSO Council and the board about the unresolved IGO and Red Cross identifiers, that this could potentially be something that may be discussed perhaps between, say, the GNSO and the board when they meet. When I get any details about that, I will make sure to send them to the list, and so I just wanted to highlight that for now. Thanks, Dennis.
Thank you, Mary. Yeah, we'll look forward to hearing what's being said there, and we'll see all of you there. So the next steps, Steve and the team pursuing the agreement with UNDESA, and we agree that that is one of the critical deliverables before we go out for public comment. We must have something in writing as to how we're going to get the ECOSOC list and how we will be maintained, and we're dependent on them. So that's the required item. The other item is, of course, the claim system definition. We're close, and we need to get that done before the public comment period. The other items, we just need to write all the update process into our language document and have the V4 ready, and maybe the version 4 is our final version, maybe not, but it'll be the next update. And I put the wiki website on this page here, and this is where we will log all our meetings. I think that's about it. So, any other discussion? And this is for you later, but there is I'm maintaining some background information for your so as a reminder, but we won't go through them now. We've been looking at them before, but I didn't see any point of reviewing them again. Any questions? comments? Everybody's good? Okay, I think then I'll conclude this meeting and I'll see you in Helsinki. Bye now.
We'll see you there. Oh, yes, one question, Petr here. Is there anything specific issues that we can assist you with in the meantime?
So glad you asked. No, I cannot think of anything right now, but so you're so wonderful to offer. We are trying to do as much as we can on our side so that we come to you with a solution that you can review and approve as much as possible. But like we did in the Marrakesh when we thought we hit a roadblock, we'll reach out to you again, and maybe we'll, you know, hopefully we won't.
Yeah.
Finding
okay.
Kind of
well, you know where we are.
Of
okay.
course, I know where you are. Thank you so much.
Thanks.
Bye bye.
Thanks, Lori.
Bye bye, everyone.